What kind of tea do you normally drink?
Honestly, my favorite tea is black tea. I really like Earl Grey.
Yeah, I tend to. I tend to drink Lipton black tea, like low quality stuff.
Just Lipton. That's okay.
Yeah.
No judgment.
I have like more expensive teas and more like interesting flavors and stuff, but it's the tea that my parents, I saw, like they always drank, and it's a nostalgia that I'm both like not attached to, but also like follow through every day.
I mean, that's fair. I guess my favorite would be sleepy tea, because like I don't.
Wait, the sleepy time tea from like a Celestial or whatever.
Yeah. I like use 2 packets and then it's great because I'm yawning after I finish the cup and it's.
Do you use it for its intended purpose for sleeping and napping or whatever?
I do. It helps.
Do you drink that with cream as well?
I do.
I feel like a good future episode would be exploring Italian sweet cream.
Exploring coffee creamer, actually. Just
yeah. I had this idea a couple weeks ago of just like making the worst cursed combinations of tea and creamer. So I had the idea of mixing Arizona, like the Arizona 99 cent tea.
Okay.
With, I don't know, like powdered coffee made or something, or French cream.
I mean, okay. Arizona 99 cent tea isn't absolutely terrible. It could be better. No one likes powdered creamer, so you're already out for that.
Yeah.
Why would you use powdered cream?
I mean, this is what makes it cursed. That's the goal.
I suppose. I guess.
I feel like another, like, what's the best combination of things you can buy in a gas station to make?
To make tea?
Milk tea, or yeah, milk tea.
I mean, if it's a gas station here, I guess you could get coffee creamer. You could get some type of tea. You could get ice.
Oh yeah, different combinations of the tea and creamer.
Oh, I see.
Because you normally don't think to combine those two, right? I don't.
I do. But
have you done it?
No. I wonder what Irish cream tea would.
Yeah.
Never mind. I take back.
No.
Just like Irish cream, like
Irish cream tea with Earl Grey. that's like pissing off like 3 different entirely different regions.
Sorry, England. Sorry, Ireland.
The Irish would be like furious.
Yeah.
The British would be furious.
Yep.
Any Asian tea styles would also be furious.
It's fine. It's tea.
I feel like some people would not agree with that. Uncle Iroh.
Sorry. I can leave now.
You've really offended one of our tea enthusiasts.
I think the best thing is that I have a Funko of him where I have like the water boiler in my apartment. So like every time I make tea, I see him there and I'm like, please don't judge me. And how I make my hot leaf juice. Like,
yeah, I will say. One thing I will say, I think people overestimate my tea enthusiasm and tea snobbery. Because I'm very much not. It's an interest and I'm starting to explore it. And I want to have fun with it. But I also, I don't get enjoyment out of snobbery.
That's fair. I think one of the best gifts you can get is like one of those variety tea packs. Because like,
yeah,
you never really know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Or like there are ones that are designed for your zodiac and whatever.
Yeah.
And
I got that at a White Elephant. I think that was from you.
Oh, you did get that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that gift. I liked it a lot.
Because it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking for a while, and I never formally introduced you, but this is my friend Rain.
Hello.
Do you want to give yourself like a quick introduction, or how you, I don't know, how you normally introduce yourself or your fun fact or whatever?
Sure. I say, hi, I'm Rain. I use she, her pronouns. I can't think of a fun fact right now because it just feels like I'm in a corporate thing again. So my fun fact is I don't really like firm tofu.
Firm tofu?
Yes.
Hmm.
It's weird.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people would argue that tofu in general is weird.
But soft tofu is great. Like extra soft tofu in soup.
Hmm. I'm a tofu fan in general.
Good for you.
Thanks. I'm tofu agnostic. Yeah, one of the things that Rain, I know, used to do, I don't know, I guess I'm not sure how much you do now, but I know you like wrote a lot in the past. And yeah, how's your I don't know, writing life going right these days?
I'm reading more. So I work in an elementary school and I also do library work part-time. So instead of writing more poetry, I have been reading more graphic novels, which is not what I wrote before. But my coworker is this wonderful older person, and we had a discussion about like, what is the purpose of a graphic novel? Like, are they nuanced? Do they talk about themes and things like that? And she says, no, they're not nuanced. So I had to fight her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In the nicest way possible.
Do they see your point? Or
yeah. No? And I think that's a really cool thing is that I was expecting it because she sees all of the students like asking for these graphic novels. And she's like, I want to get them to read more. Like, I want them to read print more. And I'm like, graphic novels are a good bridge.
Yeah.
Most students will stay away from poetry. Also, like, it's elementary school, K through 5.
Yeah.
I don't know a single kindergartner who knows a poem besides One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I appreciate you taking the time to try to like help her try to have her see a different point of view. How, this is like a weird question, but like, how did you decide, like, what was your internal monologue of like, am I gonna disagree with this person? Or am I gonna let it slide?
Okay. I was offended. So
you're offended. So you said
like, how dare you?
How much consideration was there that this was like an older coworker?
There was none. I just said, all right, we're gonna do it. So we talked about it because she said like she was talking to another librarian, and that librarian is what was it? Or like a middle school teacher, and the middle school teacher's like, yeah, graphic novels are nuanced. And then my coworker obviously disagrees. And I'm like, well, at least you're still trying, you know?
Like the person reading it?
Yeah. Hmm. I think it's really cool because like we had to talk about like what is bringing students to the library? Like what is making people read now, you know? Like, because between all the digital reading and all the weird like technological stuff, like students still need to read.
Yeah,
that's such a big part of it.
Yeah, I feel like just getting a child to be interested in reading anything is a win.
Yep.
Whether it's, you know, Minecraft tutorial in print form, or
honestly,
or a graphic novel or a comic book,
right? And writing and reading go hand in hand. And did you know, like, Avatar, speaking of Iroh, there is like a chapter book that talks about like the Avatar's journey. Like, I just read it today. It's like Tale of Aang, and it's like 7 chapters that covers like what happened when he got to Ba Sing Se.
No, I didn't know that. I know there's like a whole, like, so much lore in like comic books and like chapter books for Avatar The Last Airbender. And I haven't examined it for myself, but is it good?
It was meant for kids.
Okay. Was it like a chapter book? Like very relatively few pictures or?
Relatively few. The text is pretty large. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, as when I was doing a lot of writing, I feel like I wish I had made more time to read. And I feel like that's oftentimes the most neglected part of a writer's, especially like younger writers, their time reading and consuming new stuff.
Mm-hmm. I like that point because everyone says in order to write well, you have to read well. And I forget that reading fan fiction counts as reading.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Even though sometimes a fanfic is bad. We all know it's bad. We all can quote my immortal.
Yeah.
Love you. I need dementia raving away.
So I love going down YouTube rabbit holes, and I know my immortal, not because I read fanfiction, but because I go down these YouTube rabbit holes, and there are multiple YouTube video essays explaining my immortal and like its offshoot lore and all of this stuff. And it's just this very quirky, weird, bad fanfiction that is like the fanfiction equivalent of a cult movie.
Right. And like when I was younger, I was like, oh, this is shit. But now that I'm older, I'm like, you know what? Go off, sis.
Yeah. And I think there's like literary analysis like done by master's level or graduate level students. Like it occupies a very bizarre place in the world.
It really does. Same thing with Twilight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But back to your point, like, and I can't remember if I mentioned this in this podcast before, but I think it's important to not just read good stuff. Because when you're reading really high quality work, like everything just makes sense. And it's hard to pick up on why things make sense. And it's hard to just like, oh, just have it make sense. Like that's not very like actionable thing, right? Like just have your character make sense. Have your character act natural. Just do that. And I don't think it's good or helpful advice when you feel like you're not doing that. But what I love about bad writing is that like things could be going well, and then you get this one sentence where you're like, oh, like that was so jarring. Like I hated that. That made me feel like gross or whatever it is that you feel. It took you out of the story. And that's so important to like, it makes you stop and think like, why do I feel like that? Why is it like offending my senses as a writer? I think that's so important, whether it's dialogue or how they're writing it, or like if their analogies are weird or whatever literary thing that they're doing is not working for you. I think it's so valuable and helpful to encounter it and then think about how you would do it differently. Not from a like I'm so great point of view, because I feel like you go back to your stuff that you wrote like 6 months ago, 1 year ago, you're like, oh, this is terrible. You know?
You're just in a cave of self-wallowing. You're like, I wrote this. Yeah.
if you ever want humble pie as a writer, just read your old stuff. Just read your old stuff. Like that'll humble you really quickly.
It really will. And I think that like you also want to read the people that you like.
Yeah.
Like the authors and writers that you want to emulate. Like I don't read any Tolkien. I have some friends who will read Tolkien. I have some friends who will read The Silmarillion, which is just like a history book in novel form. That's nuts.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, it's just like straight lore.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah, and here I am sitting like, oh, there's the picture book of Kirby. Like, this is what I want, I guess, you know?
Yeah. And picture books have a lot of, can have lots of valuable, like, insight for writers.
Yep.
Because whether it's a story in a picture book form or a story in, like, a screenplay, like, there are still certain things, like, you have to keep the plot moving. Mm-hmm. You can't just, like, have lore for right. 600 pages.
It's like bare bones in such a different way.
Yeah, yeah. And it really forced, in writing a picture book, it forces you to, like this thing, things have to move
yep.
quickly.
Yep.
Like,
it's not a anime of Dragon Ball Z. You don't have 7 episodes to finish a fight.
No. Like, you've got to be moving along, like, figuring things out, having problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I came across a couple of weeks ago this article where the writer had interviewed romance writers mm-hmm. and asked and talked about, like, what were their writing suggestions. And I have the list of them, and I want to hear your thoughts on this list.
Cool.
Yeah. They strongly suggested setting a daily word count goal.
Okay, that's valid. You know, the whole concept of NaNoWriMo is there for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a goal that you're willing to hit, well, willing and able, like, go for it, you know?
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. It's a hard, I think for me, it's a hard balance looking at it. Cause, like, on one hand, you have to reach a certain level of, like, commitment as a writer.
Yeah.
Like, if you're setting daily word count goals, you're like, this is not about, like, how good you are, but, like, you're committed to it.
Right.
You like want to be a writer. You are interested in it. Versus, like, a more laissez-faire, laid back, like, I write when I feel like it, which you can, like, you, there's no, you don't, you can still be a writer and write on a more relaxed schedule.
Yeah. And they say, like, if you're trying to meet a word count and you're doing stream of consciousness, that's fine. That's great. Cause yeah. like what comes is that you're just engaging with
yeah.
the words and engaging with your brain. Like, if you have a whole page of fuck, that's fine. Are mm-hmm. we swearing? I forget, but I didn't swear. Even ask. But, like, if you have a whole page of, like, F words and everything else, like, you still wrote something.
Yeah.
Push yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it can be very intimidating starting and doing, like, small, dumb exercises can be a way to just, like, get the creative juices flowing.
Yep.
Like, you start writing fuck a bunch of times.
Yep.
All right, like, how many different variations of fuck can I make up? How many different sentences can I write that have fuck in it? And then you start riffing on that, and you're like, oh, like, that was kind of an interesting sentence. Like, what would prompt somebody to say that?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's setting a daily word count goal is, like, important and helpful if you are, like, have deadlines you're trying to get to some end goal.
Mm-hmm.
I also would not want like beginner writers to feel like crushed by it, because
right.
it can be very devastating.
And I think that's why NaNoWriMo is so popular, is that, like, it's a whole month of you and this online community or whoever you're deciding to do, like,
yeah.
the novel writing with. You're just there. You're in it, like, entrenched. And everyone's suffering. Or not.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the next tip. Don't get stuck on specific words.
That is fair.
Yeah, 10 out of 10.
Throw in a filler word.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything to say besides agreeing with it.
That is fair for fiction. If it's poetry, do you still throw it out? God, just throw in a word and figure it out later.
Yeah, yeah. It's the classic, like, write drunk, edit sober.
Yep.
Just move forward. Don't focus on crafting perfect sentences after sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep it moving. Get to that word count if you're doing that. The next tip might require a little explanation. Start on an odd numbered page. What does that mean to you?
What?
So this was a bit of like a little like they were Jedi mind tricking themselves a little bit. Like people tend to want to end on like an even number, like 42, 45, you know, 60.
Okay.
Like with volume, I try to end on one of those numbers.
55.
It's like, that's a nice, perfect number. Why would you not want that? So their trick was like, hey, like, if you end on 41, like, 41, 42. Yeah.
Oh my God, you're tickling your brain in the best way. Yeah.
Seven? I don't know. Eight?
Seven, eight, nine? Yeah. Like
this, well, back to odd though.
Might as well go to 10.
Yeah, no, now you're just a hop and skip away from 10.
I see you. All right.
Would you implement that?
No. Sorry.
I'd have to be pretty deep into like, I'd have to have a job where I really had a lot of deadlines and had a lot of pressure to produce to, but I could see that working.
Yeah. Because
every time I change the volume, I have that.
Also, what if you're just writing in a notebook? Like you're not numbering your, you know, like you're not numbering your notebook.
I feel like there are relatively few writers these days who like straight up write in their notebook for especially long form stuff. Mm-hmm. Back in our day, we would do that right on paper and then type into a computer.
I still do that.
Do you really?
Just, there's something about the translation that happens. Mm. It tickles my poet brain.
Yeah.
Sometimes I cannot translate things over digitally, so. Mm.
Their next tip was train your other senses. So, I think this one also requires a little explanation. So they were suggesting that when you're about to start writing, like have something that helps you kind of like get started with writing, like have certain scents or mm-hmm. certain sounds that when you hear those sounds, you're like, all right, it's writing time. It's
writing hygiene, essentially, like sleep hygiene.
Yeah.
For a second, I thought you were thinking of like train your other senses, look at five things in the room that you like or something like that. Which is valid.
Yeah, I think it's going to the larger like writing hygiene. Is that what you said? Writing
yeah.
hygiene. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. It goes to the larger idea of like if you want to be writing, like you need to have some level of discipline of mm-hmm. like, I am sitting down, I'm writing right now.
Yep.
And whether it looks like the shape of like this essential oil is going to get me to start writing
yep.
or like a trigger point. And to a larger extent, like you need to have like time where you're just writing, you're yep. not checking your email, you're not looking at your phone, and setting aside that time and that intentionality of like, I am writing right now is, I think, a larger thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have sleep? Writing hygiene? Do you?
These days I have horrible sleep, right? Writing hygiene. Sleep writing hygiene.
Oh, no.
I have poor writing hygiene these days.
Do you have poor sleep hygiene?
No, my sleep hygiene is pretty good. It's getting right. better.
Good for you.
I think these days it looks a little bit different because it's more focused on like generating ideas and topics for this podcast. What I've been struggling with these days is like, I feel like I've gotten a better, I've wrapped my head around how to edit podcasts. Mm-hmm. I haven't released any right now, but I'm getting to it. Okay. I understand the process. I understand what it entails. Right now, what I'm struggling with is, it's like after you release it, before you release it, you want to also promote it. And I'm struggling with finding time to just get that done. make ideas for it and film it and do whatever it is that I'm trying to do. So I think it's not exactly the same thing, but it feels very related.
Yeah, it's essentially you're establishing a flow for your work.
Yeah. Yeah. The next tip is set boundaries with your family and friends. That is basically a part of the writing hygiene that we were talking about. Yep. Yeah, your family and the people, whoever you're living with, need to understand that there are certain parts of your day that you're going to be focused on doing this and to ask for time and space to do that.
Mm-hmm. No, I was expecting more, I don't know, like write steamy things from romance writers, but maybe that's just, sorry guys.
I think the purpose of this article is really focused on like, how do you guys generate so much pages? That's fair. Yeah. What you were thinking, I think, would also be very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, we talked about this, the next tip we talked about earlier, if you're stuck, write crap for a few minutes.
Yep.
In our case, we were writing fuck for a few minutes.
Yep.
The next tip, everyone feels like a fraud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. You don't need to become a published writer to say that you're a writer. You could suck at it and be a writer.
You don't have to monetize the thing you love.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody says they're a rock climber, I don't go, well, have you done XYZ? Did you make it a climbing magazine?
Are you getting paid to rock climb?
Yeah. How many sponsors you got, bro?
What was the hardest rock you climbed?
Yeah. That's nothing. That's nothing. This is the last tip. Start small, but write every day.
Yeah, that one's fair.
Yeah, start small, write every day, if you feel like it.
No, it's write every day, full stop. It's like, I genuinely like that tip, because for me, I haven't written in so long that I feel like, I don't know, I feel like a very, very, like, empty well, but I know I'm still, like, writing grocery lists or, like, doing small things like that, you know?
Yeah.
So like I have this app that it's like a journaling app where you can check in on yourself, do emotions, self-care, things like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like what's one positive thing? And since I started doing it, I'm like, this is kind of nice. It's not the creative like poem I'm looking for, but I'm still making something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, my creative journey, I've also become focused on, like, just make something. And it doesn't have to be something you frame up. It doesn't have to lead to something greater. But just make something. And so I have this book from this YouTuber named Mariah Elizabeth. And she has two books out called, I think it's called Make This Book, something like that. And basically it's a whole book full of prompts. And you open up a page, they give you a prompt like create a new invention was one I remember. And so you create a new invention, whatever it looks like. And with these like creativity things and these creative exercises, like I really tried to focus on not getting bogged down on how can I make this the best that I could make it? Cause like that's a rabbit hole that is deep and never ending. And go through countless revisions. And I really tried to focus on like, just do it, just do it, get it done in the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, just get started. And if I wind up putting more time and effort into it, like that's cool. If I just like get to the finish line and want to turn the page and move on, like I'm cool with that too.
That's okay.
That's okay.
You know, my friend they're creating music right now.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I'm doing some like lo-fi stuff and, you know, working with some beats and samples. And I said like, oh, I want to do that too. But there are so many other people like doing that.
Yeah.
They're like, shut up, you bitch. Like, just do it. Just do it. You just have to create.
Yeah. Yeah. Suck at it.
Yeah. That's fine. You know?
Yeah. You don't have to show anybody. Like, there's so many writers who I highly respect who have like so much stuff that they're like, nobody is ever going to read this.
I'm pretty sure every single writer has something of shame somewhere that will never be seen. So yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for that, going through that with me. And I have another, hopefully, fun activity. So I asked a friend to help me with this. Thank you, Victoria. Basically, there is a subreddit called Am I the Asshole? And people will post in there with, they write a title and then they post an explanation of something that happened or something that they did, and then basically ask for judgment from the internet. Am I the asshole? Mm-hmm. And I asked Victoria to give me just the title, and then based off of the title alone, Rain and I are going to try to debate if, or try to figure out if they're an asshole or not. We don't have to disagree.
No, we're debating. I'll fight you.
And then I asked her to post or send me the text of it, of the post, and maybe some like comments that hopefully make it clear if one of us was right or wrong, or okay, both of us wrong. I have not looked at these. So Rain and I are entering with this essentially the same amount of information. Yeah. So the first one, am I the asshole for taking my brother-in-law to small claims court over art supplies?
My immediate reaction is, what the fuck, dude? how did this happen? Yes, but how did this happen?
You think they're the asshole? Asshole?
I'm going to say yes for now. My gut just says yes.
Why do you think that?
You're taking just your brother to small claims.
Well, brother-in-law, so it's not the brother.
Over arts. What did he do?
I don't know. We can figure it out later. I think that they are, I think the brother-in-law is in the wrong. I think the OP stands for original poster, for those who aren't as deep into the internet as I am. I think OP is glazing over the expensiveness of the, maybe not intentionally, but has not disclosed the amount of these art supplies.
I mean, there is that too. So maybe they aren't the asshole, but small claims.
Because like art supplies ranges from like the tin of crayons from God knows how long ago to like super expensive, like professional artist level stuff.
So like, I guess it's what kind of art supply? Okay, all right. Now I'm interested.
Okay, let me open it up. I'm gonna try to make sure I don't read the other stuff. Okay, a bit of context. I, 29, male, like to draw and try other mediums as well. As such, I've accumulated a lot of art supplies over the past few years. My wife Sally, 27, female, also dabbles a bit, and we have converted one of the rooms in our house to an art studio of sorts. There's easily a few thousand dollars worth of art supplies in that room, and we tend to keep it locked for that reason. Most important to me are my pencils and markers, which are not cheap.
Oh, no.
Chart pack, for those who care. On to the story. Sally and I had her family over for her aunt's birthday a few weeks back, and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law brought their kids with them, 7 female and 6 male. We had forgotten to lock the door to that room that day, and about an hour into the party, I noticed both kids were nowhere to be seen. So I asked my sister-in-law if she knew where they were. She said they were drawing in the other room. I asked if my wife was with them, and she said, sister-in-law, to be clear, not Sally, just told them which room it was in. I immediately rushed over to the art room and found it was a total mess. Most devastatingly was the fact that all my markers were ruined because the kids were using... way too much force and casing the tips to fray. I'm not super sure if that's a typo or what. I yelled at them to get out, and they started crying. My brother-in-law ran over and started yelling at me, saying they're just kids, it's just markers. I told him that the markers alone were $17 a piece, and he said I was stupid for paying that much. Sally tried to defuse the situation, but my brother-in-law started yelling at her too, saying we can't have this much art supplies and not expect kids wanting to use it. I told him he's paying to replace the markers and the other supplies they ruined, and he told me to go fuck myself and left. Everyone left shortly after that. I totaled up the damages and needed to replace about $375 worth, and found that the kids drew on a piece I had spent the past week working on, as well as ruining a finished piece Sally did.
Ouch.
I sent him a bill and he blocked me. So I talked with my friend who was a lawyer and had him draft a claim for small claims court and a letter to my brother-in-law. I paid him for this, of course. My brother is in agreement about this, but her family has been mobbing us, telling us we're ridiculously we're being ridiculous over some markers. Only my father-in-law, who has taken up painting recently, and my other and sister-in-law say that brother-in-law has to pay. Am I the asshole? Some comments. We mainly wanted him to admit he fucked up and apologize, that he obviously wasn't going to happen. When that obviously was not going to happen, we wanted to at least get the money to replace some of the art supplies.
Well, I think they're both assholes. What about you?
I think brother-in-law is kind of a jerk.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, it's not about, well, kids will be kids. It's like, whether they're kids or adults, something was damaged.
Yeah.
Something that wasn't yours.
Mm-hmm.
You can say about your own stuff, like, oh, I don't care, whatever.
Right.
But you can't make other people feel that way about their stuff.
Right. And it's like, you can also teach your kids to not just take random markers. Like, I get the point that kids will, I work with kindergartners. Will markers survive in a kindergarten room? No, absolutely not. Like, also, OP did not lock the door. So OP is also partially to blame.
Yeah.
However.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like just because you forget to lock your door, you deserve to get robbed.
Exactly.
So it's not exactly that either. But yeah, I guess I'm a little unclear if anybody explicitly told the kids.
Right.
It seems like the kids discovered it themselves. And if anything, the sister-in-law was like, yeah, have at it, kids. Which is like super best
true
up.
Asshole yeah. here. Like, just, yeah, go for
they're,
it.
They're perfect for each other.
Copic markers? Oh my God. Like, just, can you imagine that canvas? Do it.
Yeah. Although I do think, like, I think the OP was put in a hard spot because...
Mm-hmm.
If brother-in-law wasn't going to, like, not be a jerk about it.
Right.
I guess I can say, like, for sure, brother-in-law is an asshole.
Yep.
Sister-in-law, maybe, depending on her role in this.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to OP specifically, that is kind of your family now that you're, like, married and stuff.
Is
a few hundred dollars, like... the rock you want to stand on or the hill you want to stand on before not having a relationship with them.
That's it. That's where you want to die. I mean, like,
it's up to you. Like, I don't care. It's not my family.
Well, also, they lost artwork and the wife did too. And I'm like, okay, you can bridge that gap. However, you know, mm-hmm. I think if brother-in-law was more understanding and like talked to his kids about like, they're artists. They're creating. Like, don't mess around with that stuff. You know?
Explained how this was damaging. Apologize on behalf of the kids.
Right.
And OP seems like they would be pretty amenable to that resolution. And the money was just like the extra slap in the face.
So OP also could have told the kids like, oh, because like yelling at the kids to get out, they still won't know what they did wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the judgment from the internet was not the asshole.
Damn, I was wrong.
Yeah, there's a part two. I don't really feel like...
Okay.
You can read it on your own time. The next one. Would I be the asshole for not attending my twin brother's surprise birthday party when I was only invited as a guest?
That's fucked up of your twin brother, dude. Just saying. You shared the same birthday.
My twin brother's surprise birthday party when I was only invited as a guest.
That's fucked up for the person planning that party.
Yeah, I have so many questions.
Because the twin can't be like...
Yeah, surprise birthday party. The twin brother cannot be a part of this.
Right.
Like, so it's a surprise.
Whoever's planning it.
So whoever's planning it is like in the wrong. I have so many questions about this.
What if it's a parent?
Oh my God.
Okay. I'm ready.
What do you think though?
I don't know. Just like...
All right. So who is planning this is a big question. And we're going to have to speculate on that.
Uh-huh.
And what does it mean? I was only invited as a guest.
It's like imagine if you have siblings and I'm like, oh, okay, you can bring your significant other. And I guess your significant other is my brother, so he can come too. Like, you know? Like...
But it's like it's a birthday party, so it's like they share the same birthday.
Yeah.
They're twins. And so the implication being that like you're almost going out of your way to make sure to not celebrate them.
And yourself.
Yeah.
Just hijack the party.
I'm really curious if they communicated like, hey, you are not allowed to celebrate. do not tell people. It's also your birthday. Don't even tell them that you're a twin. Cause you're a guest.
Yes.
Right. You're a guest in this birthday party. Right. And then like, you don't, I'm also a guest and I'm a friend of the person we're celebrating, the twin brother. Right. And so like, oh, like Rain, like, how do you know twin brother?
That's my twin.
And so like I have to respond to that by going like, oh, like twin brother or twin sibling, whatever. They didn't say in the title what their gender OP's gender was, but like twin, like same birthday. Like you can't, there has to be at most like a 1 day difference.
Who put this together? Like, okay,
I don't think they'd be they would not be the asshole.
I don't think they would be either.
I don't think so. But the part of me is like, oh, but it's the internet. There's gonna be some crazy shit. There's gonna be some crazy shit about like estranged family or whatever, or like some bonker shit. All right, I'm going with the OP is not the asshole.
I'll just agree with you.
Okay. So I'm a twin. My brother and I hang out all the time and we are super close. In a few days, it's our birthday. They're both turning 25. They're both male. We share the same friend group. Oh my God. We share the same friend group and we're all really close and have been since school. He has a close group of girlfriends, about five of them, who I've also known for many years. And I would class them as being closer with them in recent years, but we are still good friends and socialize often together. Now, I have been added to a group chat labeled my brother's name, surprise dinner.
This girl's done fucked up.
Oh my God. It is a surprise birthday dinner for my twin brother organized by one of the girls in that group, and they have invited me as a guest. One of them also said in the group that it would be, quotes, be nice to see me again as well. So I just feel like an afterthought. I wouldn't have really minded if the girls wanted to organize a surprise birthday evening exclusively for my brother and themselves, but they have also invited my partner and some of my brother and I's closest friends. This feels inconsiderate and quite upsetting, as I can't understand why I would be invited to my literal twin brother surprise birthday dinner with me only invited as a guest, as it is also my birthday involving all of our friends. My girlfriend also found this action to be extremely rude and wonder why this girl didn't just reach out to her and then they could have organized a surprise involving both of us instead of just my brother, and I left the surprise element out of it. In the chat, it is clearly stated that we are to arrive at one time, while my brother is due to arrive 20 minutes later. The thought of attending makes me feel weird because it's just a celebration for his birthday party, or for his birthday, when him and I are literally born on the same day. This isn't new information to the organizer. Also, every year, my brother and I do something together because we want to and because we have the same friends. Last year, our friends and my girlfriend set up a massive dinner for our birthday to which everyone was invited, including the girl group. So now I'm at a crossroads. I don't know whether to attend or to not attend. Or I don't know whether to attend or not. On one hand, I don't. If I didn't go, I will feel left out because of our mutual friends are going. But on the other hand, if I do go, I will feel like I'm letting myself be disrespected, and I will feel uncomfortable as it feels like only my brother is being celebrated.
What if it's just a really complex lie to celebrate both of them at the same time?
Let's see the update. Could this be a secret? There's an update. Could this be a secret surprise for me too? No, definitely not. I was added to the group chat with all the other guests and given the same instructions. Does this girl have a crush on my brother? I was actually impressed by people's intuition. It's not really a straightforward crush. She's been hot and cold with them, but they aren't together. I do think she tries hard to be the most important girlfriend in his life, though. I think her organizing the surprise dinner is her way of furthering trying to achieve that status. Yeah, the consensus seems to be they're not the asshole. And you can read for further information.
Poor dude.
Yeah, that's effed up.
You're friends with this group of people who know you're a twin.
I'm disappointed in like one person being weird, doing something weird like this. Like, it's one person. Like, we all have our like weird moments of like like social complete ineptitude. But I'm really disappointed in everyone else.
Did no one check this person? Like, say, you don't think it's weird that you're just celebrating one of them? And inviting the other?
Yeah, give me one sec. I want to see if they said it, spoke up about it. Okay. So one of the friends, OP, like, talked to one of the closer friends and asked them, like, hey, why did any of you speak up on my behalf? And he just apologized and said he didn't have any excuses for it. This person still ended up going to the dinner. One of the other close friends rang up and she said that she is not attending because she doesn't feel right to do so. This friend did end up texting one of the girls explaining why she wouldn't be there. And she received just excuses, and it's not that big of a deal. Which is a weird thing to say, because as you're making a big deal about somebody else's birthday.
Mm-hmm. You want to get in someone's good graces? Don't fuck around with their twin.
Yeah, that seems like you'd be lowering your chances, not raising them.
Right.
All right. Last one I have. Am I the asshole for not telling the nurse at my niece's school about my profession?
Bro, what do you do?
Speculate.
Not telling the nurse at your niece's school.
I'm confused about how this situation would even arrive in the first place.
Like, are you a tattoo artist? Are you an accountant? Like,
I'm going to guess the nurse, like, embarrassed themselves by shooting their mouth off about something medicine related. And I think OP is like a more advanced nurse and or a doctor.
That's a good guess. I'm waiting for OP to be the asshole for one of these.
Yeah. Hey, Victoria, if you're listening to this, do better.
sorry.
I'm joking, Victoria. I appreciate this.
Kai post. Am I the asshole?
Am I the asshole? I just asked my friend for a favor and then tried to helpfully give some feedback.
Definitely the asshole. DTA.
What do you think? I'm going with not the asshole.
Okay. I'm going to go with asshole just for fun.
Okay. I, 29 female, was supposed to pick up my niece, Sophie, 7 female, from elementary school and spend a day with her. It was all mentioned before to the school, and I picked her up a few times before. Sophie was running towards me, but unfortunately she tripped and fell down. Her knee was bruised and she started crying like crazy. I took her to the nurse's office immediately. The nurse was in her early 20s and helped Sophie with cleaning up her wound and dressing. I tell my niece a lot about my line of work, so she asked if I was going to need stitches. If so, how many and what kind? The nurse was impressed. She showed Sophie a few items of equipment and she had, She showed Sophie a few items of equipment she had and asked if Sophie wanted to be a nurse like her. Sophie said no. She wanted to be a doctor like her aunt, aka me. The nurse got a bit upset and asked me why I didn't say anything about this. I was honestly confused. I was like, why would I need to even mention it? I even threw in a compliment saying she was quite good at her job and I enjoyed witnessing a professional at work. She said I was being too generous with my comments. I told her I was being honest and thanked her for taking care of Sophie's knee. Right when Sophie and I were leaving, she said she'd never be able to guess my line of work correctly because I look better than most of my colleagues. What? Yeah, I read that right. I thanked her again and said I appreciated her help. She said I still owed her for not telling her my job and that it felt like I was testing her or deliberately trying to see how she was doing. I apologized and said that was not what I meant and that I knew she was more than capable of doing her job well. She said maybe I could find a way to make it up to her properly, and I was like, sure, but Sophie and I need to go now. I don't know if I was rude, but this had me thinking, should I have told her about my job? The edit says, I'd like to thank everybody for their lovely comments and make me realize what was going on this whole time. I'll post an update if anything interesting happens on subsequent days.
Was the nurse like hitting on that?
Yeah, the comments, Victoria gave some relevant comments and she's one of the first one was, girl, she was flirting with you.
Not the asshole. Because that was my first thought. I was like, okay, why would a medical professional say that?
Yeah.
And like honestly mean it.
Yeah.
How dare you not tell me you're a doctor?
You need to find a way to make it up to me after the lie you told.
I can't look at you right now. What?
I'd never be able to guess your line of work because you look so much better than your colleagues.
I heard that and I was like, that is flirting. Just that right there. Looks so much better than other doctors.
I'd let you be my doctor.
God, you look so much better than other people.
OP, what does it mean?
Poor OP.
Why is she being so mean to me?
Maybe I should have told her. That one was so wholesome.
Yeah. There is an update and it says OP did go to the nurse's office with a bouquet of flowers and thanked the nurse for taking care of the niece's knee and asked if I had the opportunity to make up for my rudeness. And they went on a date. Yeah. So it seems like
the flirting worked.
Rudeness.
The flirting worked. mission was a success.
There was some confusion, but we got there.
A win is a win. A win.
Not the asshole.
She was a sexy doctor all along. That was, I think that went pretty well. Oh,
that was fun. I love that one.
Earlier we talked about how this was a mismatch of topics. Rain, how's your Asian American identity going?
It's great.
Yeah. It's cool. Mine's going great too.
What I have found really, really cool is like I'm making more friends. And I'm also at this point in my life where I'm like sharing recipes with people. And I think that's been the best thing, is like figuring out like how to cook not only like Vietnamese foods, but also like Filipino foods and Chinese dishes. And it's all great.
Because I've been getting more into cooking too.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you were kind of like excited about or particularly interest you?
I made adobo, like pork adobo.
Filipino pork adobo?
Yeah. And I didn't know that it was like made with vinegar. And I put too much vinegar. So
turn out. Did you like taste it? And I was like, yeah,
I tasted it and it was very, very, very sharp. Mm. And then I had to like, I put in a bunch of honey to like balance it. And I was like, this is very different. Like it's not that I disliked it. I also realized like I didn't measure anything.
Yeah.
I did it poorly. Like they gave me a recipe with measurements and I said, I can do this. It's in this case, I am the asshole.
did your like corrections like get you to the right spot or?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
So
nice.
That was what I was most excited about. Because yeah. Like I cook so many dishes with pork belly. Like there's a like the Chinese like soy sauce. With pork belly, sticky.
Yeah, it's like I think it's like one of Chairman Mao's like favorite dishes.
Yeah, and like in Vietnamese cuisine, there's te cao tao and te cao tiu, which also both use pork belly and can use eggs. So it's like I just want different ways to make it. You know?
Yeah. It's like hard to tell sometimes if you like add too much of something if it's gonna mess it up, because like. Every time a recipe calls for ginger, I always add more than what they ask for.
It's true. Because you don't know if the ginger's like, are they using like a particularly spicy ginger? Like, because sometimes.
And ginger's oftentimes like the highlight of a. Right. Like it really like brings out everything else and makes it feel like light and fresh and just like.
Like what if your ginger's not warm enough and then you just have this dish that calls for like good quality ginger, or like ginger that is spicy and you just don't have that, you know?
Yeah.
I think the stupidest thing I did was eat the pork adobo with a salad on the side, and the salad had a vinaigrette on it. Mistake. Because that's too much acid. So I was like, this is, my mouth burns. Like, it was still good, but it was like too much. It was too tangy. Like,
yeah. The last thing I made that I was kind of excited about. So, you know, like bulldog ramen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like spicy chicken ramen. Mm-hmm. Or like the flavoring is spicy chicken. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what like bulldog tastes like just the dish itself. Like I don't know what that is.
I don't know either. Sorry.
Yeah, so I Googled it and found a recipe. I think it was from Mang Chi, and they had like a recipe for bulldog chicken. Uh-huh. And it turns out it's like a Korean street food.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's like, I think there's like garlic, ginger, which is like everything. There was like a lot of honey, a lot of like crushed red peppers, like a ton of it. Mm-hmm. And some other things. but it was like, it was so good. It was really yummy and it was really easy to make. Mm-hmm. It's one of those dishes you like, you know, you prepare everything, you put it in on the pan, and then you add some like water, and so it's like kind of like thick stewy. So you cover it with a pot with a lid, and just like leave it alone for a few minutes. Mm-hmm. And when you're back, it's done and it's delicious.
So did it taste like the ramen?
It did not, which was I was a little bit disappointed because like I wanted to learn how to make it so my girlfriend would have, she loves the bulldog sauce. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be able to make it and like, oh, like we don't have to buy it. Like I make you homemade one. And it like doesn't taste very much like bulldog sauce. So I'm like, like back to the drawing board.
That's a good drawing board because my thing has been like, I made eggplant parmesan because my fiance really likes Italian food.
Yeah.
And I do too. And I see why like Italian food is great. My mom also loves Italian food.
Yeah. Your mom likes Italian food?
She does.
She's like via immigrant.
I know, but
that's not a very common immigrant mom thing.
The thing is they use ingredients in a very different way.
Oh, so she makes it. She's not going out to buy it.
No, she is. She is going out to buy it. And that's the thing. Cause like, when she makes her spaghetti with like zucchini and fish sauce and everything in between, I'm like, that it's still good. It's still like pasta. And she's like, I love noodles. I think that's also the thing. Like
the noodles.
Noodles. You
know? But does she go out to like Italian restaurants?
Yeah.
Does she?
She does.
And she likes it?
She loves it.
My mom hates when like any like non-Chinese spices. She hates it. Like, it's not even like it has to be Asian. Like, mm-hmm. a lot of Southeast Asian foods, my mom will complain that it's too sweet.
Yeah.
Like, a little bit of, like, coconut sauce or whatever. Mm-hmm. My mom likes two cuisines, Chinese and Korean food. Those are the two things she loves. Fair. Everything else, she complains about the spices.
I think my mom just appreciates, because Vietnamese food, it's very fresh.
Yeah.
Like, it's very refreshing. It's very, like, the ingredients should be fresh. You're trying to highlight those things.
Yeah.
And Italian cooking can be like that, you know?
Yeah, Italian cooking really, or a lot of Italian dishes can really focus on like, there's three things you need for this dish and you like use the best that you can, really want the ingredients to speak. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly why, because when I made eggplant parm, I was like, we'll go to Trader Joe's, gonna get the organic shit, and like, I'm not saying it makes a difference, but it definitely does, you know?
I feel like the home cook journey is like figuring out what things like splurge on, what yeah, things.
Like, what are you going to be snooty about? Yeah, like Parmesan cheese.
Yeah.
Life changing. Yeah, like expensive Parmesan. It just made the eggplant parm so much better.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed. Yeah. So you got to figure out what's the ingredients that are like, ooh, like this is worth my time to like snob out about her. Or yeah.
It's like one time I made meatloaf, like I made a classic American meatloaf, and then I made a meatloaf that was like Korean inspired, as in like I put in some gochujang and then some like soy sauce and then the crushed red peppers, and that was good. So then I tried one with like curry powder to see like how I can change it, and I'm like, this is why fusion cuisine exists.
Yeah.
Like, this is why, because home cooks happen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I feel like there's something very beautiful about when immigrants go to different lands and like the cooking, the ingredients that they're used to aren't there or are different. Mm-hmm. And they figure out a way to make it work in this new environment.
But me, did you know that initially banh mi didn't have jalapenos?
Really?
In Vietnam, they don't have jalapenos.
I guess that makes
they
sense.
They have peppers that are more like sweet and still like spicy, but jalapenos are like the closest thing to giving that heat. Mm. So I'm like, fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's just what you said, you know?
Yeah, that angle I'm interested in. I just can't stand when white people take a bunch of random foods and make it a fusion. Like, it just, it's the principle of it.
My favorite.
I don't care if people, if a BIPOC person and a white person arrived at the same, like, culinary fusion. It's the principle of it.
And it's like, this is a deconstructed bun me. I'm like, no. The point of bun me is that it's a sandwich.
But if you did it, if you gave me a deconstructed, I'd be like, oh yeah, yum, delicious. It
literally means bread. Like, there's no bread in this, you know? Like, calls it a deconstructed bun me with no bread.
I would eat your deconstructed bun me with no bread.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd be confused at myself. So there's that.
What else have you been exchanging recipes with other friends or what?
I think, yeah. I sent them a recipe for pork rib soup.
I feel like you told me about this a while ago.
Maybe. I also watch a lot of videos on YouTube about cooking. My mom has forever been the champion of, oh, I'm not going to teach you. You should just go to YouTube. And then my dad was like, she said, teach your kids how to make these soups. And then she finally did. And we spent like a day together doing it when I was visiting them. And my mom's like, yeah, this is a lot easier than I thought it'd be. And I'm like, we're all old now, mom. When I'm like four, asking you how to make this food.
Yeah. Yeah, parents are sometimes a little stingy with the techniques.
It's true.
Or they have the opposite, where they just like overwhelm you with information. Mm-hmm. And you're like, please, like, I just need to get started. I just need to wind up with something edible and I'll figure it out later. Let me suck, mom. Let me suck at this thing.
You should add this. I know, it tastes weird.
Yeah. Do you like taste as you cook?
Mm-hmm. You can't not.
That's something I oftentimes don't do.
You are a brave soul.
Yeah.
Although when making the adobo, I definitely should have tasted more.
Wait. You always do it. I
tasted it and then I realized like I added the vinegar.
I mean, it sounded like it was done when you were tasting it.
It's too much vinegar. Like,
you didn't answer my question.
No. When I tasted it, it was just immediately after adding like the soy sauce and the vinegar. And I was like,
were you tasting the sauce?
Yeah.
Before it went into the raw pork or whatever?
No, I just.
How do you taste the. Are you tasting.
I did it afterwards. I'm sorry. So then I knew I added too much vinegar. If you don't know how to balance your dishes, then you're screwed. So.
Okay. There's room for improvement for both of us. I want to like feel more connected with the ingredients and just like experience them as individual things and start thinking more about the quality of these ingredients. Because I have started to notice if certain ingredients like aren't as fresh, whereas in the past I would be like, fuck it, who cares? Mm-hmm. and I want to be better about tasting as I'm cooking, which I'm the way I cook now, I'm just at the very end, maybe if you remember, try it out and then adjust.
Right.
And usually the adjustment for me is like adding more salt.
I mean, you can oversalt, but it is more devastating if you undersalt.
You think so?
Yes.
How do you correct for oversalting? My parents would usually add like sugar.
You add sugar or water. Or just change it completely. Some people add cream, depending on the recipe, I guess.
I've never gotten to that point. I've always the times that I've had issues with salt, I've always undersalted. So that's something I'm trying to grow in as well.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said like salt in layers.
Yeah, it's true. Like salt, like when you're making a bolognese or whatever it's called, and you're sauteing the carrots, onions, and celery, like you salt that. And then you salt after you add the meat in, and then you salt after you add the tomatoes in, and you're tasting as you go. What if
I don't? What were you gonna say?
I don't know. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I don't really feel like tasting like onions and carrots for saltiness.
No, but it's not about the saltiness at that point. It's, can you taste the ingredients themselves? Because the whole point of salt is that you're making things taste more like themselves.
Mm.
So like,
so if it's undersalted, you think it's gonna be bland even before like the final dish?
Yeah.
Hmm.
If it's undersalted at that point, if you can't taste what you put in there, then you're just kind of screwed.
Hmm.
Do you go to the farmer's market?
No.
I think you should.
Why?
Because you're just talking about like getting to know the ingredients and like farmers grow the food. It's more connected than cup foods. You get to see the people who are like picking your green onions. And then I think you can really see, like, farmers markets really just highlight how fresh ingredients can be.
Like, I see what you're saying.
Like, when it's tomato season, it's tomato season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're a lot better looking than other farmers.
Please note that I looked away from you immediately. Use a pickup line like that. Someone's going to be upset. Wow, you grow so much better than other farmers.
That's fully a joke. I am very happy with my girlfriend.
I'm still not looking at you.
In comedy, it's called a callback. Thank you. What's the next food that you want to cook?
Oh, that's a good question. I want to make tonkatsu ramen from scratch.
Oh.
So I made a chashu, like Japanese style.
Yeah.
I messed it up because my rind. I think I added.
Chashu is a pork, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the pork belly. My rind ended up being really, really soft. So when I tried to pan fry it to give it that sear, it just melted. So got to figure that out. But did you also know that on Amazon, they sell like tonkatsu broth concentrate?
I've seen it. I didn't know that was on Amazon. Wait, concentrate?
Yeah, like
it's not frozen. It's
no, it's like in a bottle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You just open it, shake it. Wait, shake it before you open it. Sorry. Shake it, open it, like pour out 2 tablespoons into like a bowl of hot water.
Yeah,
and then you have your broth. That's what I did. Like, I tried one concentrate. It was actually pretty good.
Yeah,
because I didn't have the time to.
Do you have plans to make like do you have plans to make the tonkotsu broth from scratch?
I do. I have plans too. I just don't know when. I have looked at so many recipes because the thing is, like, it's so different from other noodle soups I've had, I feel. Because, like, you have pho, and that's beef noodle soup. You have... No, I'm just blanking.
Like, beef noodle soup?
Chinese beef noodle soup. Yeah. You have, like, wonton noodle soup. But all... Like, none of those are about, like, extracting, like, the essence of pork, you know? So I'm just fascinated.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to. The gears are turning in my head because I have secret ambitions to like do more content with like with food and cooking. and like what makes pho and what makes. Like, my mom makes an amazing beef noodle soup, Chinese beef noodle soup. It's so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how to do that. Like, her beef is, like, so tender and soft, and it's so, like, flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
I love tonkotsu ramen, but also, like, what what makes it good, you know? Right? And there are all these good qualities. Like, you know, you go to enough restaurants, you kind of have a sense of like, oh, like this is this one, has, this place that's really good, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there are places where you're like, eh, like this is not a return to place for me.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it says a lot that when I am craving pho, I don't go to any of the pho restaurants. Sorry, guys. I go to the Chinese handful restaurant on University.
Magic Noodle?
Yeah.
What?
Because they're
I'm going to edit this out for you. For their video. I can't have you getting excommunicated from the Viet community.
Like, oh, no.
Oh, rain.
And maybe it's just that I know it's not pho, so I'm not as critical of it.
But like, this like fusion of like pho, Chinese pho. You're like, it's its own thing, like it.
Different. Same concept, different in execution. Because that is hard. Pho is beef noodle soup. And yeah.
We should go to Magic Noodle sometime.
We should. Because, okay, pho, when you're thinking of pho, you're thinking about the broth. But for me, I think of the noodles first.
Hmm.
So half the time when I'm craving pho, I'm not craving like that broth. I'm craving the rice noodles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I'm craving how my mom makes it. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah, pho of the trio that we talked about, pho, tonkotsu ramen, and Chinese beef noodle. Pho for me is like third place. Sorry, pho. That's a blasphemous thing to say where we live.
Is it though? The thing is, everyone knows about pho for Vietnamese cuisine. No one knows. Like, I want people to talk about bún mì Huế because, like, it's spicy beef noodle soup.
Mm.
It's different. It's not so heavy on the beef.
Yeah. Can I ask? I've always like wondered this. Like, we have a pretty big Viet community, in Southeast Asian community in the Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of these immigrant moms are like really good cooks, and like food is just something that's so important in just about like every culture, and like, you know, the next generation wants to learn how to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Like what kind of food is pho, if that makes sense? Like, is it like a country, like a home style food that like you just throw together, or is it like a semi-elevated dish, special occasion dish?
I think it's all of those things, because if you think about it, in Vietnam you have pho for breakfast.
Oh, that's sick. That's awesome.
Or like hot tea for breakfast. You have noodle soup for breakfast.
Yeah.
Because you want something light enough so that it's not weighing you down when you go to work.
Yeah.
And like for my family, pho is something that's special. My mom will make it on weekends and invite like everyone over for that giant pot.
We should do that with our friends.
You should. I need to actually make beef pho. I'm too afraid to make beef pho. So I've only made chicken pho.
My girlfriend would love that.
Yeah.
She mainly eats chicken.
Yeah.
It feels also like a commitment, you know, like you mess up a recipe that's for two people. It's like, oh, like that kind of, that definitely sucks. And I'd prefer to not do that, but like, it's just two people, like, mm-hmm. we'll figure it out. But like, it's like failing on a stage.
Oh my God.
You have like six people over and like, hey guys, like put too much vinegar in your mouth.
Whatever it is. No, vinegar. That is fair. And I think that's part of why like it's a bit daunting for me.
Yeah.
Is that like you can't just make pho for two people unless I don't know. Like, in my head, it's never been, like, a two-person thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always been, like, a, oh, let's invite everyone over.
Never invited me over.
No one can see that I'm patting your shoulder, but I want them to know I'm patting your shoulder right now.
You probably hear it right now.
One day, guy.
Okay. Thank you. Because I want you to know I'm interested.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You're still friends, right?
Sure. Yes. You look much nicer than my other
friends. Sorry. Didn't mean to offend you.
I'm still not looking at you.
Well, Rand, thank you for taking the time to hang out with me and be a guest on my podcast. I appreciate you as a person and just the energy that you bring with you. It's always very calm and a pleasure to be around.
Yeah.
I appreciate your view.
Thanks for having me.
If anything nice you want to say about me, I said a lot of nice things about you.
You're great.
Okay, thank you.
I can't look at you when I'm saying your face. You're great. You're fantastic. You have a nice house.
Thanks. I'm trying to get it clean.
I still can't look at
me. Okay. Should I bring my sleep mask down here?
Oh, no. Very good.
All right. Thank you, Rain.
Anytime.